This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, welcome back into The Drive. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. And we'll also be joined by the Plaid Prince, the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride, Pete Sweeney. The answer to today's pop quiz was The Tonight Show back in 2010. Conan O'Brien said goodnight to The Tonight Show. Speaking of tonight, last night you all know about the brouhaha from Kansas State and Kansas. Let's get both sides' perspective to what happened. Let's start with John Kurtz of 1350 K-Man in Manhattan. He also does the Faithful to Our Colors podcast. Let's start with this. Let's talk about K-State's portion of this. What did you make of the steal at the end of the game?
Yeah, so I took some heat from K-State fans for this, for my stance. I love Dejuan Gordon, and I think Bruce Weber summarized it pretty well. Dejuan is a guy who said has the heart of a lion. You can tell he gives more effort than anybody out there on the floor. He is a guy that is trying to be the next Barry Brown, which is the real attitude and grit of the team. So it's hard for him to turn it off. He's also a guy that is from Chicago. So he played in, like, inner-city Chicago, right? And there's a certain element of toughness and never-say-die kind of attitude that comes out of a player like that. So I think even though Bruce Weber told him to just dial it down at the end of the game, it's hard for him to just turn that switch off. I do think that it was, I think Bush League is probably a good term for it, that it's not something I would endorse doing all of the time, and Bruce Weber even didn't really endorse it, but you also understand why it happened. Now, having said all of that, I don't think Dejuan Gordon deserves any blame or responsibility for the fact that it escalated into the melee and the brawl that it was. I think what Dejuan Gordon did was wrong in the context of a basketball game, kind of against the unwritten rules sort of a thing. But he got the perfect retribution when the block then came on the other end. It's once you start standing over the guy and everything else that followed where Silvio DeSosa goes out of line. You had a scenario with unwritten rule broken. Then it was solved, kind of like in baseball. It's like Dejuan Gordon got hit by the next pitch, right, when the block comes down and happens. But then everything after that is on Silvio DeSosa.
The next K-State culprit, so to speak, would be James Love, who came off the bench ready to throw blows in that. What do you make of his, I guess, escalation of the fight? What do you think happens to him regarding the K-State program?
Yeah, like, he's definitely the one, obviously, that is in the most hot water from K-State standpoint. And James Love is a guy that, like, has already been on, not really because of disciplinary issues, bad footing, but almost quite literally bad footing. He's had a lot of foot injuries during his time at K-State and has never been able to stay healthy, and it's already been a frustrating thing for fans wondering, like, hey, why is K-State hanging on to this guy on scholarship? So it's not like he has a real solid spot on the roster right now. I don't know how that will actually factor into what's going to happen here, but I think James Love deserves a step or two below what the punishment would be for Silvio DeSosa if you're just asking me. That was interesting because, again, James Love has just been a non-factor for so long, and I actually had a chuckle talking to Fran Fraschilla last night at the barb that he threw at him, saying that's the most hustle he's seen out of the guy in 3 years. So it'll be interesting to see how all that shakes down from K-State's standpoint. But Love, listen, he was out there throwing punches right back, so he was certainly a willing participant in the fight, and I think he'll deserve whatever punishment is coming his way.
John, obviously we don't have this because it would be happening in private, but listening to the post-game comments yesterday from Weber, Weber didn't seem too all upset that his team was involved in this. I think he kind of felt like because of Silvio's actions that the program got kind of disrespected and then the chips kind of fell where they may. I think we see enough of these things to kind of hear the tone of the coach where he comes out and kind of condemns the team for their actions. I didn't get that feel yesterday from Weber.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I thought, actually, for a guy in Bruce Weber who throughout his career has been, I think rightfully so, criticized for how he's handled himself in the media, because he can just be an oversharer and he'll say things that don't come across well after losses and all of that. I think this was actually a pretty calculated move that I think set the right tone. K-State and Gene Taylor did not release a statement last night. Jeff Long did, and Jeff Long was profusely apologetic, which I think Kansas should have been. for how that happened with Silvio De Sousa. And I think Bruce Weber's tone set and the fact that K-State doesn't release a statement there is saying, like, hey, our guys certainly played a part in this. We don't want to condone this. But at the same time, we're not the ones who turned this into something ugly. That's your guy. And I thought when Bruce Weber said, hey, I'm just glad it didn't turn into anything worse and nobody got hurt, to me that deflects the spotlight back on, yeah, this could have been worse because there's a dude running around there in a Kansas jersey with a stool above his head. That's how things could have been worse. So I actually thought that was a pretty solid move by Bruce Weber, the way that he handled things postgame.
That was John Kurtz giving us the K-State side of things, but KU certainly has their own perspective. With that, let's bring on Josh Klingler. So last night, a fight, P-H-I-G-H-T, broke out at the Fog.
I didn't realize the spelling had become that. That's good.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, spelling's not my strong suit. Really, English isn't. But Josh Klingler and I talking a little bit of KU basketball. Dude, what the hell happened where at the end of the game, obviously there was the steal on the K-State side of things, a little dicey. Then there was the block on the KU side of things. Again, a little dicey, but after the steal, whatever. And then all of a sudden, the Royal Rumble broke out.
Yeah, just the amount of things that added fuel to a spark was unbelievable to me in all this. Because you could literally go step by step, and in every case saying, if someone doesn't make a certain decision, this whole thing becomes diffused. And instead, it all snowballed in that direction where one thing led to another, led to another, led to another, led to another, which got this thing to be at the gravity in which it is. I'm, you know, severe punishments for just about everybody involved. I don't have a problem with at all. I think that both sides are pretty culpable in this thing. You know, you start at the beginning, like the steal, kind of questionable, right? Team's trying to dribble out a ball. The unwritten rule is don't mess with it. But also, if they do steal it, let them get a layup. The game's over. We're walking off the floor. We're not doing anything. That doesn't happen. And then you stand over someone, and we know the reaction of testosterone-fueled 18, 19, 20-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I could just see how this thing escalated to the point that it did. And again, any step along the way, it could have been halted by someone making maybe the correct decision.
Do you think, though, that there's a main person to blame or point the finger at for what happened last night? Because to me, it seems pretty obvious, and it's Silvio De Sousa, where, yeah, something was probably bound to happen because of the sequence of events that you're talking about. But once you escalate it to the point where you pick up a chair, it's almost like everybody else, and I don't mean to defend anybody, but everybody else is kind of forced to defend themselves and their teammates when it gets that crazy.
Yeah, there was a lot of swinging before that happened, and
touché.
I think that they're going to look at the various angles of the videos now that have come out, people in the stands and all the ones that have surfaced since even last night when we kind of just had the ESPN video, and then we got, as you know.
Well, they're coming out now. There's a lot of angles.
There's all these angles from different videos where there were a lot of guys swinging. I think it's pretty hard to determine exactly who was at the initial fault. I'm just at the point where it's like nobody took the right step to stop and not prevent that next step from happening, which was what made it become ultimately dangerous is that no one involved took that pause to stop and not make that next step, which fueled the next step, which fueled the next punch, which fueled, and again, there's no excuse for picking up an object and seemingly threatening to wield it. That's the most egregious visual, certainly, of the entire thing.
One thing that I don't think enough people are talking about, and maybe it's because the truth is you and I have sat right there many a times. So for people that don't know, the way that it's set up is the court, and then right behind the court, there's like one row of media seats, and then there's the handicap section, which is where this happened, and there's the student section. But we're talking about, like, what do you think, 10 foot? Like there's between the court and the student section?
Not very far.
And all that's going on in between. In hindsight, it could have been a lot worse for the public because that's literally where Josh, and again, you and I have sat there many times, where there's at any times like 20 or 40 people in wheelchairs.
Right. It could have been very dangerous. A lot of people could have gotten hurt. Also, the student section is luckily walled off at that point. If that spills into the student section.
I can't believe that they didn't get involved. Like a bunch of like students, who knows what they did before the game.
I'm just saying if that student section isn't walled off and that escalates into the student section, it could have been a whole lot worse. So from that standpoint, but it also did prevent, I think, everybody from being able to get there and break it up. If something like that happens on the court, you're able to kind of get in there and maybe break that up a little further. Because it was beyond the stands and you had a hard time getting in there. We saw some coaches kind of diving over tables and security trying to trying to get into it. That's not an easy place to get in and pick people apart, which made it difficult and let it, I guess, fester probably longer than it should have.
So that was our K-State and KU whip around on the incident yesterday that happened at Allen Fieldhouse. If you missed the breaking news, Silvio De Sousa, he has been suspended indefinitely from Kansas, and we will find out more about the suspensions at 5 o'clock today. The moment that we know, I promise you, you will know. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest, and we'll be joined by the plaid prince, Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride. Coming up at 3:30. Coming up on the other side, the media has been talking crazy about Patrick Mahomes. I'll explain it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in the National Cash Contest. We'll also be joined by the Plaid Prince, the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride. Pete Sweeney will join us on the show coming up at 3:30. As you would expect, with your team being in the Super Bowl, you're getting some good opinions and some stinky opinions. The stinkiest opinion I've heard so far as we get ready for the Super Bowl was from screaming Stephen A. Smith on ESPN's First Take.
We just going to ignore the weapons that this man has available to him? Can we not ask ourselves how other quarterbacks would look if I had Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins and Travis Kelce to throw and Mecole Hardman to throw the football to, okay? I got Damian Williams out of the backfield. I got an offensive line that protects me to the point where I'm sitting back there, I'm taking pictures, I'm calling my lady, I'm saying, hey, baby, I'll be home at such and such a time before I even get touched. I mean, think about it. Not to mention the fact that we saw Tennessee inexplicably rush guy like Patrick Mahomes' time. I understand that his 20 or whatever, impressive even though he did, and he was the only thing we're telling you right now, those brothers that he's throwing the football to, Aaron Rodgers has those weapons. What's he going to do? Let's go back. Let's go old school. Pick any quarterback. Troy Aikman's a three-time Super Bowl champion. He ain't never had weapons like this. Okay? He ain't never had weapons like this.
Did he just say that Troy Aikman never had weapons like Patrick Mahomes does? He doesn't have the all-time leading rusher in the history of the NFL. He didn't have a Hall of Fame wide receiver and Michael Irvin to throw the ball to. He didn't have Jay Novacek at tight end, who was the top five tight end in the NFL. Troy Aikman didn't have guys to throw the ball to.
I like when he started talking about the Chiefs' offensive line like it was the offensive line that Priest Holmes ran behind, like Will Shields and Willie Roper on this offensive line. He said that Patrick Mahomes had all day to call his girl and make arrangements and make reservations. That's not the truth either. I'm not saying the line is bad, but I don't think that the line is as great as he made them out to be.
You want to know who had a great offensive line?
Who?
Troy Aikman. Their offensive line was so good, they were in commercials. Like, they didn't have Larry Allen on that team?
No, they didn't.
What is Stephen A. Smith talking about here? This is what I don't like. We can acknowledge that it takes a great situation for a young quarterback to be successful. A young quarterback gets drafted into a great situation, and now we try to use the great situation to then explain why the said great quarterback isn't really that great. That's why I always hate these analogies where we say, well, if we took player A and put him on team B, but that's not the scenario. Why can't we evaluate the players based on the team and the situation in which they have been placed? Yes, Mahomes has more weapons than some players do. He makes the most of those weapons and does it at an all-time clip. Shouldn't that be the conversation?
It should. I think the reason that people bring it up is because we've only seen Patrick Mahomes with one of the greatest offensive coaches ever. And he started his career with Kareem Hunt, who was the rushing champion, and the best tight end in Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill, and a pretty good number two in Sammy Watkins. And even though I was just talking smack, the offensive line is above average. So he's kind of right when he's talking about Patrick Mahomes has been placed into a very advantageous situation. All that being said, you have to actually go out there and do it. And all Patrick Mahomes has done is won the MVP, been to an AFC championship game and another AFC championship game, and now a Super Bowl. BK, I don't think it's as much about Patrick Mahomes' weapons that he has as far as skill position players. I think it's more about the weapons that he has, like his right arm and being able to get outside the pocket. And we saw the last couple of games being able to use his legs. As much as it's the other weapons, the other guys on his team, I think it's the weapons that are connected to his body.
How about Peyton Manning's weapons? Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, Dallas Clark, one of the better offensive lines in the league.
Edgerrin James.
Like, what are we talking about? Of course he has great weapons. Of course he has to have those things to be able to put up the historic numbers that he's had the first 2 years of his career. Of course it helps him that he has Andy Reid. And also, there's always been the argument about how Aaron Rodgers is the quote-unquote most talented player that we've ever seen play the position, right? And we only say that because he doesn't have the rings, and so we have to have a couch of, okay, well, I can't say he's the best because if I say that, now we're getting into the qualifications, we're getting into the rings and all of these different things. So I'll couch it and say he's the most talented. No, Patrick Mahomes is now the most talented person I've ever seen. I was not around to watch Dan Marino. I can't compare the two. But I know of the guys that I've seen basically since the 90s, Patrick Mahomes is the most talented quarterback I've ever seen on the football field, better than what Aaron Rodgers was in his prime. And so all of those weapons that he has, that's great. But Patrick Mahomes is the one that is maximizing what those weapons are capable of doing. Take Tyreek Hill out of this offense. He's still going to be a great receiver. He's not going to be this great of a receiver. Take Travis Kelce out of this offense. He's still going to be, in my opinion, the best tight end of the NFL. He's not going to be this good as a tight end of the NFL. Patrick Mahomes is the secret sauce that makes all of the rest of this look as good as it is. He's the guy that takes it to the next level.
So that was one stinky opinion from Stephen A. Smith. Marcellus Wiley wanted to get in and join in on the fun.
A lesser version of Patrick Mahomes actually has this team going farther because of the play of the defense. And even in Patrick Mahomes' greatness, he's starting to learn a lesson from Lamar Jackson and lean into his running ability to close that gap. So as insane as Patrick Mahomes is with his arm talent, is as insane as Lamar Jackson is with his mobility. And if you want to say what's the difference between those two guys, I think that Lamar Jackson is closer as a passer to Patrick Mahomes than Patrick Mahomes is as a runner to Lamar Jackson. It's not clear for me. It's still Lamar Jackson.
What is Marcellus Wiley talking about? Like, the funny thing is, and I know it's going to sound really bad, I understand what he was trying to say at the end.
You do?
Like, the gap between...
Translate, please.
Like, the gap between, I would say, Mahomes' passing ability and Lamar's passing ability...
is wider than the gap between Mahomes' throwing ability and Lamar Jackson's throwing ability.
That's what I think he was trying to say. But... who cares about any of that? Like, this isn't one of those check the boxes thing where, all right, I'll check the one box. If you had the opportunity, because they're both around the same age. It's not like Lamar's 31 years old that you can say, I'll take the younger quarterback. Lamar's going to be 23 here, and Patrick Mahomes is 24. They're both on their rookie contract. One is just 1 year ahead of the other. If you were starting a team, which one would you rather have? There is not a general manager. There is not a coach. There is not a front office executive in the NFL that would take Lamar Jackson over Patrick Mahomes. So what are we debating here with Lamar?
Let's also let Lamar do it a couple of times. And I think Lamar is going to be great. And I think Lamar might win multiple MVPs and go to Super Bowls and all that stuff. But we said the same thing about Baker Mayfield last year. I'm not trying to compare the two. We said the same thing a couple of years before that for a guy that was on his way to actually winning the MVP before he got hurt in Carson Wentz, and he looks like a pretty average quarterback right now. That's why I think there's separation created so far in the career of Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, and everybody else, because those guys have done it a couple of times. Deshaun Watson now, we've got 3 years of a sample size to say, okay, that guy's an elite quarterback. Patrick Mahomes, we're now talking about two full seasons and two full playoff runs to say that guy's elite. Let's just be careful before we anoint Carson Wentz or Baker Mayfield the next great quarterback like we already seem to with Lamar Jackson.
I want to play one quick cut for you from Good Morning Football that they believe that the comparisons to the all-time greats for Patrick Mahomes is a little bit premature.
There's a sense now that we're about to enter the Mahomes era, just like we were going to enter the Rodgers era and the Breeze and Peyton era. It is so hard to get back. That's why the fact that Brady went to 9 is a joke.
Yeah. Can't we be hopeful? Do we always have to press caution button? Like, to me, this could be a new era. This could be a 10-year deal. He's that good, and they've surrounded him with enough talent.
But I kind of have to side with Kyle on this.
Of course, it's the prudent thing to not jump to that.
Just because this is what, let's wait until he win it, is what you're saying. Like, get the ring first, put it on your finger, and then let's have this conversation, because you talked about those eras of Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, all these eras supposed to happen.
Yeah.
We also, you remember the Andrew Luck era that we were
supposed to still be? No, I don't. He never came close to this.
What?
Andrew Luck never sniffed a Super Bowl.
Well, he was in a title game.
He was in a title game. He got blown out by the Patriots.
He was in a title game.
Raymond gave the footballs to
the Rams. He was in a title game, just like Pat Mahomes in a title game last year. All I'm saying is when Peyton Manning left Indianapolis, we were all saying, okay, this is going to be Andrew Luck's league.
This is the point I'll make. And you guys know that I'm typically more reserved in kind of jumping out of the window in these grand comparisons to current players to all-time greats. We have seen 36 games of Patrick Mahomes as a starter in the NFL. Excuse me. We watched the entirety of Tom Brady's career. We watched the entirety of Peyton Manning's career. We have seen the entirety of Aaron Rodgers' career. I ask honestly, in what we've seen from Patrick Mahomes and what we've seen from those players, what could they do that we don't think Patrick Mahomes can do? From a mobility standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, from an arm talent standpoint, from arm strength standpoint, what have you seen from those all-time greats that you haven't seen yet from Patrick Mahomes? Because I think that we've seen all of those characteristics that he certainly doesn't have the resume. He's in year two of being a starter. But if we're talking about ability and talent level, I don't think there's much of a gap between Mahomes and those other greats that we've seen so far in his career. Coming up on the other side, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. And we'll also be joined by Pete Sweeney, the Plaid Prince, the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride. Pete Sweeney joins us next. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive. Coming up in 30 minutes, we will be joined by the mayor of Kansas City, Quentin Lucas. Quentin Lucas will be on the show coming up at 4 o'clock. Let's give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Text the word BEAT, B-E-A-T, BEAT, to 72881. That's BEAT. If you want Chiefs talk and a chance to win $1,000 on the 30s, well, there's only one station in Kansas City doing both. Weekdays from 8 to 5. Your next chance to win is coming up in 1 hour, but go ahead and win right now. One more time for those of you keeping score at home. BEAT, B-E-A-T, BEAT, to 72881. Your national cash contest code word 4330 is BEAT.
You know what song has a sick beat? Have you heard the Mac Lethal Chiefs anthem?
I actually have heard it.
It's a little bit better than one that I put together, I'll say.
You have a song already?
No, if you want me to, I can probably get one by the Super Bowl, but no guarantees that. I mean, Mac Lethal's I actually thought was good.
I would recommend doing that this week and not next week on Radio Row.
I'll get it done when I get it done.
It does not sound like we're getting done.
It'll get done. These things take a while.
We have two more shows before we leave.
Maybe it won't get done.
If you only have
and one of them's at FanFest, so I would recommend having it tomorrow.
We don't really have all that infinite amount of time here. Let's go to the phone line, someone we always have an infinite amount of time for. He is the Plaid Prince. He is the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride. His name is Pete Sweeney. Pete, thanks a lot for coming on. This is perfect plaid weather, my friend.
I mean, this is what you want. You pull up, you put on some plaid, probably a flannel, you curl up with some hot cocoa and call it a day.
Pete, I feel like Chuck is getting all the credit for this team going to the Super Bowl. You have been the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride for two seasons. They have gone to two AFC championship games, and they're heading to the Super Bowl. You might be the good luck curse for the Chiefs.
Yeah, bad luck Chuck likes to fly above the radar. I like to stay below, so I'm upset that you kind of just brought that to light. Let's just keep that on lock for now.
So, Pete, let's start with this. Earlier we had on James Palmer to talk about his interview with Frank Clark. What was your reaction to it? Because we've been kind of talking about this all week. I think that every team, every defense sort of needs that individual. Pittsburgh had James Harrison. Seattle had Richard Sherman. Like, every defense kind of needs that guy with that attitude, with this chip on his shoulder. And once Frank Clark got healthy, he 100% became that person for this team.
Yeah, and it thank goodness, because BK would tell you that we were up at training camp, and I think we both agreed we couldn't believe how good he looked. And then he started playing with all the injuries at the beginning of the season, and we're like, what happened to the guy that was in St. Joseph? And so to see how he's come after he got healthy, missed a couple games, and came back into the lineup. And I've said this before, and I've said it on Twitter, and maybe on this show too. I love the fact that he and Tyrann Mathieu both signed contracts and then are still this motivated, this enthused to be champions. And I just don't think you see that. I mean, you know, Therese Paylor always says, the contract year is undefeated. You would expect the opposite of that to also be true, but these guys are outliers in that sense.
One thing that was really surprising to me, Pete, was how good Chris Jones was in the game. I thought it was going to be a Mark Ingram situation and that we weren't really going to see a whole lot of Chris Jones, but he actually was a major factor in the game, and now I think the expectation with now an extra week to rest and prepare for San Francisco that you should get healthy enough Chris Jones for the game against the Niners.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. He's a big part of what makes up the Chiefs' front and the pass rush. This is from Next Gen Stats that I found interesting. When Jones was on the field in this game, the pressure rate was 39%. When he was off in the pass plays, it was only 6%. So he makes that much of a difference as far as pressure on the quarterback. And you know, I look at this game, and we're early on here in the process. Jimmy G, to me, isn't much to write home about. So you get in a little pressure in his face, and all of a sudden, who knows what happens when it comes to turnovers for this defense that suddenly become a strength for them.
Pete, last thing here on the defensive line, two players that I thought were exceptional. Mike Pinnell, we had him in studio yesterday. I thought he made two back-to-back tackles that really kind of jump-started stopping Derrick Henry and Tano Passanio. If I had told you last year that Tano Passanio would play key in a win for this team to go to the AFC Championship game, you might have had me drug tested.
You know, Mike Pinnell, he only has one game left. Could he become the producer of the drive when BK goes to St. Louis?
Very
That'd
possible.
That'd be a huge upgrade, let's be honest.
No, yeah, he's been great, and it makes you think about the question with Tennessee, you know, that one game during the regular season. You know, we joked, and I remember going on your show and being like, Mike Pinnell wasn't the difference. I don't know, maybe he was. You know, that kind of makes you think that maybe he was. And then, yeah, Tano Passanio, he's certainly a guy to me that we all thought would be a Cleveland Brown once training camp was over. And it really was Steve Spagnuolo who took to him. He likes these bigger guys up front. He found a role for them, and he's really flourished in it. And again, what's cool about this team, and I think you do see it with all Super Bowl teams, is you start to have love for these guys that come through at the end, and a lot of times those are role-playing guys. And so you're seeing the importance of guys that, listen, we've all talked about. You're seeing where Sammy Watkins is shining. You're seeing where a Dirty Dan is playing a role. Guys like Mike Pinnell and Tano Passanio. Mahomes is nice, but you really need everybody, and I think that's why you have such a championship feeling with this team.
Yeah, Dan, been the dirtiest of them all so far in the postseason. We're talking to Pete Sweeney here on the drive. So, Pete, on that defense, I know that the biggest difference maker, in my opinion, whether you're talking about culture on the field or stats or whatever, has been Tyrann Mathieu. Besides Patrick Mahomes and your time here, can you think of a player that's made this much of an impact by adding him to the team than Tyrann Mathieu?
Not in a free agent signing. Because it extends from the field. I mean, in the second half of the year, he was Defensive Player of the Year candidate, if not the best player, period, and as far as the defensive side in the National Football League, just talking about the second half. And then you just talk about the confidence he gives the rest of the room, and how, you know, you have guys like Dan Sorensen, who, you know, he's a great player, but he's pretty vanilla, but he's pointing to his helmet celebrating because of something Tyrann Mathieu said, and he's just bought in. Like, to me, that impact can be seen out on the field, and not only what Tyrann does, but how it extends to the secondary and really the other side of the ball. I mean, now you've got offensive players for weeks who have been talking about championship swagger, and I think Tyrann Mathieu really brought that to the table.
How much do you think Tyrann Mathieu is going to impact on slowing down, not necessarily shutting down, but trying to slow down George Kittle, who, as far as I see it, is the biggest offensive weapon for San Francisco in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, Kittle was a little bit slower start this year, and, you know, he really kind of turned it on toward the end of the season. I like that matchup for the Chiefs. So, you know, I think that's something where you're going to want a player that's strong and can deal with who a lot of people say is the best tight end right there with Travis Kelce. So I like that matchup for the Chiefs. I think he'll have a better time than the 49ers will with Kelce.
Do you think this game's going to be a shootout? Because I don't think the teams can stop the Chiefs right now. Patrick Mahomes and this offense, they're healthy. They're going too well. I think they're going to put up 30 in their sleep. What about the San Francisco side of things against this Chiefs defense?
You know, if you can get a stop or two at the beginning of the game, then I think you never know what can happen with the score. We've seen now the past 2 weeks that the reason the scores have been so padded is because of what happened at the beginning of the game where the Chiefs have to come back in it. Anthony Hitchens talked about that today, where for 3 weeks in a row now they've been trying to get off to a better start, and they've been working at it, and they really want to emphasize that in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I tend to think that if the Chiefs can just start fast and hold the 49ers and don't go in another hole like they've been doing, then maybe you get to that under. And I know the number has been rising. What's interesting to me, though, is I look at this game, and we're going to be breaking it down for another, 12 days? But let's just be honest, and let's call a spade here. Is Patrick Mahomes beating Jimmy Garoppolo, or is Jimmy Garoppolo beating Patrick Mahomes? I think we all know the answer to that question, and that makes me feel better.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Right now we're talking to Pete Sweeney. He is the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride. Coaching matchup in this game I think is pretty strong as well. I think the Kyle Shanahan might be the best offensive mind in the NFL, certainly in the top three. I would say he, Reed, and Sean McVay I would put in that top three. Why I think this game is going to be a shootout, because you give both of these offensive minds 2 weeks to kind of figure out the weaknesses of the other team's defense. To me, both teams score at least 30, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a good point. And you know what? At that point, it is what it is. You're going to see who's going to make the adjustments. And if it goes the way that it has gone the past few weeks, and you're right, Kyle Shanahan does come up with some creative plays and ways to exploit the Chiefs' defense, you got to have confidence that if, say, the 49ers do have a lead, and the Chiefs have already shown that they can eventually figure out a way to stop the opposing offenses, and that leaves time for Patrick Mahomes to get back in the game. So, yeah, I just like the vibe of the Chiefs right now, and I think this should be an exciting time over the next 2 weeks here.
Pete, one really big picture question. Sammy Watkins' contract is sort of due at the end of this season, and they have to make a major decision on Chris Jones. He showed a lot of heart by playing in that AFC Championship game, battling the injury, and playing well. What would you do with both of those guys where it could potentially be their final game?
I think what I would do is let Watkins go and try to find a way to bring back Jones and make him happy. I mean, I don't know if that's going to even be impossible as you're trying to stand under the cap and get Patrick Mahomes $200 million. What I think may happen is Chris Jones will be franchised and then traded, as we've talked about before. I think I could see that happening. You know, it is still a business here. And then with Sammy, I've just heard some rumblings around Kansas City that he just loves Kansas City, loves having his family here, loves this team. I wonder if there's something you could cook up where there's some kind of an extension and restructure there. And now that he's been so important in the playoffs, and you have Brett Veach talking about him the way he did, is there a way to keep Sammy Watkins? So what I want to happen, probably not happening. I actually think the opposite happens.
That is my guy, the Plaid Prince, the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride, Pete Sweeney, joining us today on the show. Pete, I look forward to seeing your smiling face in Miami, Florida.
Yes, much warmer times for you and I, and Theta, I know you like that.
Oh, my goodness, Pete. I appreciate everything that you do on this show. That is my guy, Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we will be joined by the mayor of Kansas City, Quentin Lucas, will be on the show, and we'll find out if he'll give us the inside scoop on when the parade would be held if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. Really quickly, before we talk to Mayor Quentin Lucas, some people are stealing your ideas.
What's that?
Now, I didn't do this. I did not create this. But you know what?
What?
Adam Teicher created a...
Excuse me?
He had his five moves that propelled the Chiefs to the Super Bowl. Number five, overhauling...
That's lazy. He didn't even get to 10.
I know.
Sean would never do this.
Never cheat us. Number five, overhauling the defense in the 2019 offseason. Is that one of the moves that you would consider that has propelled this team to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I don't like Teicher's takes or Teicher's list, whatever he calls this thing. But yeah, obviously the overhaul of the defense is a major, major reason why the Chiefs are here.
Number four, he has promoting Brett Veach to general manager in July of 2017.
It was a move that I, and I think a lot of people questioned, because remember, at that time, you kind of had three choices, right? John Dorsey, Chris Ballard, or Brett Veach. And I just as well assume, man, John Dorsey's done a pretty good job. And then Chris Ballard gets picked off by Indianapolis, and the Chiefs end up hiring Brett Veach. And I thought, okay, he's taking over a pretty good situation for a team that's already won the division and has the coach in place. Can you be the guy to get us over the top? I'll admit, it took me till about halfway through this season, maybe actually until about a month ago, when I realized that Brett Veach clearly is the right guy for the job.
Number three, the drafting of one Patrick Mahomes.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that the Chiefs are here. No, I think they would have been here with any quarterback.
That should have been lower on the list.
Come on, dude. Of course, yes. We don't have any of these conversations or don't talk about any of these things,
I'm surprised that you're cool with it being three on the list. No, that's where I thought you were going to go.
This is in chronological.
Yeah, no,
order.
This was the third reason. I gave you five,
in order?
Four, and three.
No, it's in chronological order. I just told Carrington that. He's probably.
I don't care about that. And then, number two, trading for Alex Smith.
clearly then, more important than drafting Patrick Mahomes. We would all agree with that.
Tyser does. And number one, hiring Andy Reid as head coach in 2013.
Yeah, I mean, not the most original list.
Should have been
all.
An honorable mention, honestly.
Not the most original list. I'm not known for all my not always original either. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, Andy Reid had something to do with it. Patrick Mahomes had something to do with it. The truth is, all these moves had to happen. Because do you like pie, C-Dot? You a fan of pie?
It's okay.
Have you read Super Bowl Pie?
No.
Me either. But I'm hoping to try it next week in Miami. If we're dividing this Super Bowl pie, who gets the most credit? There's a lot of people. Patrick Mahomes certainly gets a big-ass slice of that pie. Andy Reid, you give him about half the pie. But Brett Veach get a pretty big piece, too.
Carrington's face when you said, I want to try a piece of the Super Bowl pie.
My corniness drives him crazy sometimes. Sometimes he can handle it. Sometimes it just pisses him right off.
I actually have a toss-up question. I'm curious to get you guys' thoughts.
What do you want
to
know?
Let's say in 2017...
Super Bowl or AFC Championship game pie? Is that what you were going to ask?
Let's say that they draft Deshaun Watson and they do not draft Patrick Mahomes. Do you think they are in the Super Bowl with the exact same moves? So the team is the same. We swap out Mahomes and they have Deshaun Watson on their team.
Where's Mahomes playing? I think that matters.
Houston. So Houston gets the quarterback that you don't get. So Houston gets Mahomes and then you get Deshaun Watson. Do you think they are playing for the Super Bowl?
I think Pat is playing for the Super Bowl. I think that Patrick Mahomes is a transcendent enough quarterback where even if Bill O'Brien was his coach.
Do you?
It's not like he didn't have any weapons. DeAndre Hopkins, you could argue, is the best wide receiver in the NFL. And J.J. Watt, at the time a few years ago, was the best defensive player in the NFL. So I think that Pat would have a better chance of being there than if Alex Smith was still the quarterback
here.
You're
doing a lot of dancing, dog. You're doing some dancing. Would the Chiefs be playing San Francisco in the Super Bowl if they had drafted Deshaun Watson?
Probably not. Probably
not.
Okay, I think they would be. I think they'd eventually get to multiple Super Bowls and win them and all that stuff. But, no, I think that if you just asked me the same question. You worded it different. Who gets the biggest piece of the pie? Pat gets the biggest piece of this pie with whipped cream.
A lot of it.
Any ice cream?
If he wants it, yeah. All the ice cream.
Am I crazy for thinking that it's Andy?
Yeah.
Am I crazy for thinking it's Andy?
Yes, you are.
I'm just saying is I've seen Andy get to this point without Mahomes.
Right. Have you seen him win a Super Bowl without Patrick Mahomes?
He hasn't won one with Mahomes yet.
And we can have that conversation.
They haven't played the game yet. So I hear what you're saying, but he hasn't won one yet. Once we get to that point, I'm willing to have a different conversation. With the information we've had so far, I've seen him do it with lesser quarterback. Now, obviously, both of them are equally important. I'm just for the sake of radio. But if I had to say right now, I think that Andy Reid, if everything was the same, this defense was playing the way that it was, and they had Deshaun Watson as their quarterback, I think they're in the Super Bowl.
Man, it's tough to argue. Like, if you said they're going to be cool, I'm fine with that. I think maybe Pat would have got to one. I think Deshaun Watson would have got to one. Everything's cool. I think that Andy Reid has gotten a lot of chances to win the big game with a lot of different teams and a lot of different quarterbacks. And we're not just talking about okay quarterbacks like the Chiefs have dealt with the last 25 years. We're talking about either Hall of Famers or borderline Hall of Famers. We're talking about guys like Mike Vick. We're talking about guys like even Alex Smith the last couple of years and obviously Donovan McNabb. He's had his chances with different guys, and he's gotten close, which is why I think eventually when the Chiefs hold the trophy and cash in, Andy's going to get a ton of credit, no question about it, but Pat's going to get more.
One person that deserves a lot of credit in all of this is Steve Spagnuolo. BK actually brought this stat to our attention. We told Mike Pinnell this yesterday. He has a chance to get his second Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator, to rebuild two defenses on the fly, and especially this team where – we talk about it was Super Bowl or bust. For Brett Veach, it was fix the defense or bust. If this defense had been bad this year and not evolved to the point and we were having a different conversation this week where they lost in the AFC Championship game because they couldn't get their defense right, I don't know if Spags gets a second year. I don't know if Veach is coming back. I think Kansas City would have asked for somebody's head. Andy would have been cool. Certainly Mahomes would have been cool. I don't know if Veach and Spags would have come back. There was an immense amount of pressure on both of them to get this defense right. And they not only got it right, because at the beginning of the season, we were simply asking, well, what if they can just be 18th in the NFL? Over the last 8 weeks of the season, they have been legitimately one of the five best defenses in the NFL, and they did something I didn't think was possible. They stopped Derrick Henry. Not just stopped Derrick Henry, he was a non-factor in the AFC Championship game.
So if they would have done bad and not gotten to a Super Bowl, talking about Veach and Spags, you say it's off with their heads. Well, they've got them there, and they're one game away from winning a Super Bowl. So what are we talking about? Because it felt like Bob Sutton basically had a lifetime contract, and he sucked as defensive coordinator. If Spags comes here for 1 year, completely flips around the defense, has a bunch of Pro Bowlers, and we have a Super Bowl parade, then what does he get? a lifetime contract. Same thing with Dayton Moore across the parking lot at the Truman Sports Complex. That guy's never got to buy a beer in Kansas City again. As far as I'm concerned, and I know there's some people that aren't going to agree with this because of the way the last couple of years have gone, I think Dayton decides how long Dayton works as a general manager of the Kansas City Royals. I think we're going to be having a similar conversation with Brett Veach. If he's on the job for 2 years and is able to win a Lombardi trophy, everybody's going to love that guy.
It just seems like Andy, and I do think a big part of like being a leader is like surrounding yourself with people that you feel comfortable with and people that you work well with. He seems to have a really good relationship with Brett Veach. It makes sense. That was his intern back when he was in Philadelphia, and he's known Steve Spagnuolo for 20 years. Like, Reed has really created almost his perfect situation. That I think if you ask Andy Reed in 2003 and 2004, because BK, you remember, part of the complaints in Philadelphia was that Reed started to have too much power, where Reed was making all the decisions. He was coaching the team and trying to go get the parts and do all that kind of stuff. Just few people, I think, are able and capable to handle both of those things. But now you look at it, Veach, a lot of people in the NFL circles trust his scouting, and you trust his ability to handle the cap better than what you had with John Dorsey and his ability to kind of put a certain mix of players into the locker room together. You trust Spags to go run the defense, who has previous head coaching experience where he can kind of run that entity for himself, where now you can fully focus on coaching this offense and getting Patrick Mahomes to be the best quarterback in the NFL. Like, he really has created an ideal situation for himself.
And for long term, when you talk about consistency, it's not just like San Francisco, where we all agree they're a really good football team, but how long? How many Super Bowls are they going to go to with this combination? The Chiefs are built for the next 5, 10, 15 years with Patrick Mahomes, hopefully if Andy Reid's in good health, some of the other moves that they've made, and now it's going to come down to drafting. Let's just call it what it is. For the next few years, when they're paying Pat a ton of money, more money than any NFL players ever got, it's going to come down to drafting the right guys. And this year, Brett Veach did that. He didn't have a first-round pick. That turned into Frank Clark, and he still ended up with Mecole Hardman. Oh, by the way, also Juan Thornhill out of the second round. Speaking of inconsistent, I was going over the 49ers schedule earlier this year, and they're weird. They're a really good team, but they're weird. Like, they beat Washington, this all the way back in week 7, 9-0. And then the next week, they put up a 51 spot on Carolina. Remember the game back in week 13 when they lost to Baltimore? Mm-hmm. Now, nobody scores on Baltimore, but they only scored 17. It was the week after that that they put up the 48 spot on New Orleans. The Chiefs aren't just a better team. They're a much more consistent team. And you and I don't agree on a lot, but I think we finally agree on this. They're putting up 30. At minimum, no matter who they're playing, where the game is played, what time, AFC, NFC, whatever, this team right now is putting up 30. San Francisco, can you put up 31 on this defense?
Yeah, I think that's a good point when it comes to it. I also would say, though, I don't know if Kansas City's been more consistent than San Francisco. I think they've been one of the three best teams in the NFL the entire season. I think it took people a little bit time to get on board because Jimmy Garoppolo was their quarterback. But I think if we're looking at it from week one until now, who are the three most consistent teams in the NFL? I think San Francisco's at the top of the list. Their offense has been inconsistent in terms of points scored, but defensively, their ability to run the football, Kittle, like, they have a lot of very consistent parts on their team.
Have you guys seen this quote from Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report yet?
Mm-mm.
So he wrote an article earlier today, and here's one of the quotes from the top of the article. And asking a handful of people around the league who they believe will win the Super Bowl, what surprised me, actually stunned me, is how many are confident that the Chiefs will blow out the 49ers. Three different assistant coaches and two front office executives with whom Bleacher Report spoke with all picked the Chiefs, picked them to win big, and I don't believe that that belief is isolated to those that I asked. That's really interesting. People around the league seem to be in agreement with Sean of, listen, the 49ers are good, but right now they're running into a buzzsaw that is the Kansas City Chiefs.
And those people might just be looking at the quarterback matchup, which is somewhat lazy, but it's also historically what you kind of do in the Super Bowl, right? Who's got the better quarterback usually ends up deciding who wins this game. And nothing against Jimmy. You guys know how much I like me some Jimmy. But Jimmy's what, the 18th, 20th best quarterback in the league? And Pat is hands down the best quarterback in the league. There's quite a bit of separation there.
I mean, couldn't we have made that same argument in the NFC Championship game, and the Packers aren't even close to the San Francisco 49ers? Like, I'm with you. Jimmy Garoppolo is the 13th best quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is probably a top five quarterback.
We got to have some conversations about Aaron Rodgers.
This Aaron Rodgers, I don't know.
Where would you have him ranked at?
Well, he's top 10, but barely.
Yeah, I would agree. Back into the top 10 right now.
I didn't know you guys were so down on him.
He's better than Jimmy.
Yeah,
he didn't have a very good year this year. Like, as much as the Packers were solid and they won a lot of games, he wasn't necessarily the reason why they were winning a lot of those games. It was a weird year for him.
My bad. I didn't know that you guys had Aaron Rodgers as the 8th best quarterback in the NFL. I learned something new
10.
Every day.
Get it right, 10.
Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. And the Chiefs quarterback has a chance to transcend sports stardom if they can win the Super Bowl. But coming up next, we will be joined by the mayor of Kansas City, Quentin Lucas, next on The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.